Welcome to the October 19th regular meeting of the Commission to End Homelessness. As we always will do, let's stand and we'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. The agenda for today contains a brief general description of each item to be considered. Except as provided by law, no action shall be taken on any item not appearing on the agenda. The Commission encourages public participation. If you wish to speak on any item appearing on the agenda or during general public comments, please complete a speaker request form, turn it in to the clerk prior to the reading of the item. Speakers will be given 3 minutes to speak. The clerk will run the timer and announce when your time is up. Public comments may also be submitted electronically by emailing response@ocgov.com. With this, we'll move to the roll. Madam Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Thank you. Commissioners, please indicate your presence when I call your name. Commissioner Chafee. Commissioner Wagner. Commissioner Vanderpool.
Here.
Commissioner Stiles.
Here.
Commissioner Rose.
Here.
Commissioner Parks.
Here.
Commissioner Dunn.
Here.
Commissioner Black. Commissioner Afable.
Here.
Commissioner Kistan.
Here.
Commissioner Tuan.
Here.
Commissioner Patella. Commissioner Spitzer.
Here.
Commissioner Searcy.
Here.
Commissioner Marshall, Commissioner Moncrief, Commissioner Wyatt,
here.
Commissioner Pyneman, Commissioner Bates,
here.
Commissioner Houchin, and we do have a quorum of voting members present.
Okay, thank you, Madam Clerk. A reminder of what Doug just told us and reminded us of, that everyone is aware that the room is hot mic'd for live streaming the meeting, so we'll confine our conversation to the business at hand. We will now move to the agenda for today, begin with our presentation items. Madam Clerk, would you please read the first item?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. The item one is a presentation on the healthcare agency outreach and engagement.
Thank you, Doug. Will you please open the agenda item for us today? In addition, we have Christina Weckerly to present on this item, and she's the Division Manager for Orange County Outreach and Engagement.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Dr. Fablay. I'm going to quickly turn it over to Christina, but we're really excited to have her and our program here to present. As she'll go over, and as some of you may know, outreach and engagement has expanded over the last couple of months and will continue to expand. this is our first presentation, and later in the agenda we'll talk about where the Pillars report that we worked on for almost a year is at. But this is a presentation. This is our first time that we have a group in front of us after our Pillars report has been finalized. And we've asked Christina and her team to present not only on our program, but also how it aligns with the practices and principles we as a commission have agreed upon and published through our homeless service pillars document. As you would imagine, she'll present on our program, and then we hope to have a really robust discussion and a Q&A, both talking about how her model intersects with and aligns with our framework, but also how outreach and engagement can continue to partner with many of you and many of the stakeholders in this room. So, yeah, Christina, please.
Today on specifically those outreach and engagement.
or just across the border, we want them to know on Tuesday afternoon, we will be at this park and you will find us. So they might be transient, but they know where to find us. Outreach also looks like canvassing, so going around, finding kind of our hotspots or where our population has migrated. And it also means response. So we have a triage line we'll be talking to you about, and so outreach can look like a call coming in and we respond to that location. Engagement for us means that we have started a process by which this person is willing to at least meet with us and not tell us off, so to speak, and willing to have a conversation. So we will continue to do outreach until we get to the point of engagement. It's a progressive process, and our whole purpose of engagement is that we are trying to link them to supportive services and housing. That's a little bit on that. And I should say, too, engagement can be formal or informal, meaning that sometimes a client gives consent and they are enrolled as a participant, and we are working on an individualized action plan, and they're aware of their plan, and they, you know, we're setting appointments. Sometimes for our population, that's a little too overwhelming. So we know that they're enrolled, but they may not. So we'll say, hey, how do you feel about if I come back here on Thursday? And look for you here. Will you be here on Thursday? And we can follow up on this. And they can see if you made it. Okay. So they don't have to formally enroll with us or sign consent. So I wanted to put that out. I mentioned that I started as an outreach worker, a health educator, going out into the field. And that's where our program really grew its roots. So for about two decades, we were an HIV communicable disease program focused on substance users who were out of treatment. But what we learned from that experience, some of those lessons we still carry today, such as our safety practices, and in the way that we engage the population, really meeting them where they're at, being client-centered, and also letting the client lead the process. And our purpose is also to instill hope and resiliency. In 2009, we began as Behavioral Health Services Outreach and Engagement, which most of you may know us as BHS O&E. And this is because we received MHSA funding to do outreach, and we were so effective as HIV outreach that we weren't needed for that purpose anymore. So we had a great opportunity with MHSA funding to start looking at working with folks that were experiencing homelessness, and we focused specifically on that population and to try to connect them to mental health services or substance use services. And then in 2014, we combined teams, which meant that now we weren't just focused on prevention. Now we can work with our folks that were serious and persistently mentally ill, or we call that SPMI. And then in 2015, we became your blue shirts. At first, we weren't happy to be the blue shirts because we were so used to just trying to fit in with the community and not call attention to ourselves as county workers. But as we don the blue shirts, we now wear them with pride. I think it's also helpful that the Helpful Honda people, right, that campaign, started this idea that, hey, well, if they're wearing a blue shirt, they must be helpful, right? But now when we talk to staff, they're like, yeah, I love it. When people come up to me, they say, I was told to talk to the blue shirts. So we appreciate that our blue shirts are synonymous with, you know, a team that can help and a team that's going to follow through. And then just this July, we have expanded our model of care, and that's what we're talking more about today and getting into detail about. So our goal of OCONE is to improve the health and well-being of our population, and we do that in a variety of ways. So we want to connect with them where they're at, that's really from field encounters. We want to provide a cross-sector coordination of services. So I'll talk a little bit more about that. We want to work with our partners that provide other disciplines, like our street medicine partner, our assessment teams, and really connect in the field so that we're providing services across the continuum. And we've also expanded. We focused on the behavioral health population before, and now we can serve anybody experiencing homelessness. They don't have to have a behavioral health need. So we're really excited about that expansion because it also means that we can be more communicative with our partners because we don't have to be bound by HIPAA or there's something called 42 CFR, which means we can't talk about substance use. So now we can engage more freely with our partners and talk about who we're working with, and then we can still compartmentalize that piece. And then we also expanded our population to look at, we're not just living in interested, being honest, treating them with dignity and respect. We're about equality. And then I talked about progressive engagement, that it takes ample time to build these relationships. And we're in no hurry. We're going to be there. It may take a week, a month, it may take years. And then we celebrate that when we've helped a client along, when we've engaged with them for years. Our strategies that we use is really about being person-centered. There's no wrong door approach. And because we're so flexible in our funding and the population we serve, we're able to help a client in any direction that they're motivated. So we use something called motivated interviewing, where we listen to their story and we look for those opportunities, those little kind of gets that they use when we're talking, and like, okay, that's where we're going to start. It may be that they're talking about their pet, right? Oh, I'm worried about my pet. All right, let's talk about your pet. That's how I'm going to engage you. It may be that they're worried about, I had a client that said, you know, I'm hearing a lot of rats in the area that I'm sleeping at night and it's keeping me awake. Okay, where can you sleep tonight that's going to be safer? Have you thought about shelter? If you're not ready for shelter, why? What does that mean? So we really try to explore kind of where they're at and address those barriers. We then connect them to supportive services and, of course, housing. So we are an access point for the coordinated entry system. As I mentioned, we use the recovery model, and that just ensures it has these tenets that we approach things to ensure that it's client-led, that we really support hope and resiliency and recognize that what they're doing right now, what are the strengths in that and what they're doing to keep themselves safe. And we use a whole person focus, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. So again, you'll see your colors really align with the same techniques and strategies that we're using. And our population, I mentioned, is expanded. Someone does not need to have a behavioral health need, but instead just anybody who's experiencing unsheltered homelessness currently in Orange County. A typical referral to us could look like, and I do this every day, and we get it every day, well, not every day, but at least once a week. Driving to work, I see someone experiencing homelessness, and I'll call our triage line. Sometimes I call Jen directly and say, hey, can we get somebody out there? I actually got off the freeway just a couple weeks ago, and I saw a woman in a paper jumpsuit that was zipped down to about her navel, and I thought, there's somebody who's really vulnerable. We need to get somebody out there. So, you know, that's the type of call that we get. We sometimes get calls about encampments. We get calls from businesses. We get calls from you all, and then we'll respond to those. Our team is comprised of a multidisciplinary team. So we have behavioral health clinicians, mental health specialists, certified addiction specialists. We have a public health nurse. We've had more nurses, and we're in the process of hiring more. Our supervisors go out in the field, which is great for mentorship, but it also really helps us with the chain of command because they can let us know, hey, this isn't working. This is a barrier. Our staff need this resource, or we need to figure out this. Or they'll make calls when they come up with a barrier when we're trying to coordinate with another provider. And then we are also, we have peers with lived life experience, and we're recruiting more. And then this was for, I love this picture. This is Mental Health Month, Awareness Month in May. We do, through our multidisciplinary and collaborative teams, we see ourselves as agency ambassadors, meaning that if you're not feeling connected with the community and you don't feel comfortable talking with a provider, we recognize we're showing up with our county badge, right, and our little county logo shirt. We want to be good ambassadors to the county services and the other supportive services across the continuum. So we want to build, again, that trust so that they feel comfortable accessing the service. We spend a lot of time doing navigation. I love feedback I got the other day is that your staff are half the time working with the client, half the time on the phone. Yes, but they go out two by two, so one person can be with the client, the other one can be on the phone while we're navigating the system of care, trying to ensure that they have an appointment, addressing barriers to getting there, or bringing the service out to them. that. You know what expectations are. You know all your resources. You know the different philosophies. You know how to approach clients. And then with those roots, they go out and they grow the tree. So outreach workers work incredibly autonomously. They get to decide and be creative with the clients and kind of grow the direction of where the service is going to take them. So it really takes strong roots to be able to allow these teams to go out and make those kind of decisions and be flexible. We also have challenges with resource availability when the client is ready. We would love when a client says, hey, I'm ready for A, B, or C service, that we call out that provider and we say, great, we'll take you over right now. But that's not our reality yet, and so we look forward to continuing to work with you all and across the continuum so that resources are available for our folks. And we're in the process of adding a north and a south location. Right now we are all operating out of our centralized office, which is here in the city of Orange, but we're going to be adding a south location and a farther north location so that we can deploy and arrive quickly. These are just some numbers of how we measure success. So looking at our number of contacts, these are duplicated contacts, and then the number of folks that we case manage over the last couple of years. I wanted to point out one of the ways that we measure success also is through successful linkage. And for us, that means that we have verified that this person made it to their first appointment. And in fiscal year 2021, our linkage looked like 13%. 13% for overall linkage, but 25% for behavioral health linkage. And you might be saying, huh, that's really interesting. Is it actually easier to get to behavioral health? Not necessarily. I think the first is better about confirming they made it to their appointment to a behavioral health service. Sometimes some of the other services, it's hard to confirm. And then in fiscal year 2021, we went to 38% of overall linkage. Our goal is 30, so that's already really exciting. And for behavioral health, we were at 43%. So a really big increase, and we're very happy to see that change. How we're going to measure success going forward. So these kind of outcome reportable items were developed with the Office of Care Coordination, and this will be consistent for our OCONE team and then also for our regional contracts. They're really process outcomes, so we're also looking at other outcomes that we can add. We have used different tools, evidence-based tools in the past, and not really loving any of them because they're usually a pre-post measure, and that can be really difficult. So we're trying to find a new measure that will really look at self-efficacy or the quality or the experience for this individual, besides a satisfaction survey. It's something that really lets them kind of assess if they feel like they have more skills, more determination, or they feel like they're in a better place. And so, give you a second for that. Almost done here. What to expect when we call our team. When we go out and when we work with our partners, like our cities and other providers, we have found to have a direct staff point of contact really works well. So we do this with our HLO teams, where they have a point of contact that they can just call and say, hey, this is what we're looking at as far as you guys following up, and we can have a conversation rather than calling our triage line, but someone is welcome to do that. We do referrals, as I mentioned, to shelters, or we coordinate with a referring provider that might be our HLO teams. We use a multidisciplinary approach, as I mentioned. I didn't mention yet that we provide transportation. We do have county vehicles, so we will take folks to their appointments. We also give bus passes and taxi rides. And then we are participating in our Care Plus program, and there's two cohorts, a homeless cohort and a justice involved. So we're participating in that in these multidisciplinary teams to really look at how we best help this individual and work together to serve them. And our regional care contracts will be doing the same. How to access our team, again, someone can call our 800 number, and it's answered 24/7. Then we indeed, it is the only thing that they can ask. And that resonates with me when I thought about speaking to this group, because when I look around, I see a lot of partners, valued partners that we have worked with maybe for decades, and some that we're developing partnerships with, and then a lot of opportunities. So I just wanted to thank you again for your partnership, thank the Commission for their support and for their leadership, and together, I don't think that we're small, but we are mighty, and I really feel like we can further impact homelessness in Orange County. So thank you, and I have time for questions.
Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. So I have two. I pretended I was you getting, you want water?
Oh, I was going to ask, can I get some water over there?
We have water. Do you need water?
And it's a big bottle.
Oh, there's a bottle.
Oh, see? Yeah, thank you.
So I was pretending I was you getting off the freeway and I wanted to call.
Yeah.
Okay, so I did what I think everybody does. I plugged into Google.
Mm-hmm.
In Orange County, California, how do I report a homeless person?
Mm-hmm.
And I got the city of Orange as a top hit with the Orange Police Department. Okay? Then I got city of Orange homeless. I don't know why it says county, right? Then it said Homeless Services County of Orange at ocgov.com, and then it talks about CalWORKs. Then I got the Orange County Fraud Hotline, which we know it is, and then Homeless eGov, blah, blah, blah. Then I got City of Santa Ana. When I was running in my last election, I spent about $5,000 a month to drive my Google hits. What are you doing when people put in Google search terms, like I just did, to get people to this phone number? Like, what is happening technologically? Because that's bad, right? I mean, I just did it just for the heck of it. If we want somebody to go out just like you did, I want that person helped, or can we get somebody? What are you doing to make sure that some of the funding we're using is backing up the Google searches so that your citizens are actually getting here?
A really great question, and I don't have an answer of what we're doing technology-wise to increase our hits. What I am hearing, though, is it's an opportunity for us.
No. This is no. Your presentation is phenomenal, and I'm so excited to hear you do this. But you have, like, you knew who to call. And so this 800 number, where is this? How, like, can you just, somebody do that? Can we just figure out how to get a general Google search to lead you to, hey, how do I help somebody who's homeless? How do I report that, whatever? Because going to the PD would be frustrating. So that'd be great.
Yeah.
Is it part of 211? So we call 211?
The 211 refers to us. Often they refer to OC Links because that just feels like the partnership. But they also refer to us directly. They actually refer to us directly often. So our phone triage line, even with OC Links, are you ready? try to do this differently now. And you know what? He wasn't ready for him. He was ready for his dog. He said, I've been living in my car, and I went back to living on the sidewalk because it's too hard for my dog to get in and out of the car. And I'm willing. And I to tell you the truth, I was like, I'm so glad I asked because I was to get into the assumptions. I'm like, all right, it's been 4 years, dude. You have 9 years of chronic illness. Like, what's going to happen? And really, in behavioral health, we call that threshold. Whatever that tipping point is, I want to find that tipping point, and I want to help them, right, get to the next step. So moving in that stage of change from pre-contemplative or contemplative to actually doing it. And so it was really about, all right, so who's going to watch your dog tomorrow then? So that you can get to this appointment, and we can get you back in. And he really showed up for his appointment. He's really interesting again today. So I feel like, I believe in that starfish poem, like, right, it makes a difference to this one. I don't know what it's going to be, and I don't feel like it's fair to say how many interactions, because keep in mind, I haven't talked to this guy for years. He just kind of fell on our radar again. We see cases like that all the time. Jen will bring up a name, and I'm like, I remember that person from you know, this time or that time. And so it's hard to say, but when somebody's ready or they're almost ready, we want to, I don't want to say pounce, but really take that opportunity. And that's why we need to have the resource on the other end, right, so that they're ready. So sometimes, I will say this, for our serious persistently mentally ill population, it tends to take, I would say, a long time, sometimes years until they get ready, sometimes months before we even get an alias or a name, but we keep trying. And that's the great thing about outreach, is that it's not time bound, we'll just keep trying.
Yeah, so let me, so that's what I want to focus on. So I want to focus it back to us.
Yeah.
That's not acceptable. And that's why San Antonio put their foot down, and that's why a philanthropist built their housing shelter, whatever you want to call it, because the business community said that the homeless population in the downtown, the Alamo, all that was destroying that town, their tourism, everything else. So it's not really a question, it's just something to put out there to say, I think we have an obligation to deal with that, right? Where they're out there, and they're, in my opinion, there isn't an indefinite time. They're doing their work, which is fantastic, but we have to start saying there is a timeline that's acceptable, not acceptable, and people have to be steered in certain directions, because them just remaining 4 years or indefinite, that's not fair to the community. It's not fair to the person who is dealing with that affliction. So I'm kind of out of my lane. This isn't my expertise. But my point being is, as what they're doing is not the policy work making those decisions. We're supposed to be making recommendations from here about what is acceptable and what is not acceptable, what we'll tolerate, what we won't tolerate on the street.
Can I speak to that? And I appreciate that. I think I want to add to Christina's response. So the expansion of O&E, both of their staff and these additional contracts, are our goal to address. Because what you saw and heard in San Antonio is what is happening here, what is happening nationally. Like, it's not rocket science. It takes time to build rapport. But that time has to happen. So the expanded capacity that we have on O&E to have more bodies out there increases that engagement, and the specific care coordination contracts that have come on with O&E as well are focused on providing our most difficult individuals with an individual who's going out there, I don't want to say every day, but almost every day, engaging the individual, seeing what's going on, what will you take, what won't you take. The additional part to that is we are starting to collect more data in our HMIS database to understand exactly that. You know, how long does it traditionally take, and how do we shape our programs in a way that's going to increase that? The exact question you're putting out on the table of should this group sort of make this, you know, a recommendation about what's acceptable and what's not? I'm open to hear that. I think the true advocate in me and the social worker in me who's done the work realizes that, knows that it takes what you articulated, repeated engagement, And to what Christina said, when that window of opportunity opens, we have to have the resource connected. And I think, you know, we are doing a better job in aligning those resources, but we're still, you know, there's still areas where if someone says, I want a detox bed at this moment, or a substance use bed, or, you know, another option, even when they say yes, there are moments, and plenty of them, where we say, we're going to have to wait till the next opening. And that's a real sort of disappointment.
I'll deal with that scenario.
Yes.
But the scenario I'm raising is, no, I don't want to go.
Yeah.
Or at 4 years, but no, at some point, okay,
yeah,
it's not acceptable. Yeah. And the question for me is, what's the standard? I mean, I think as a commission, you have to set some parameters of what is okay and what's not. What will society tolerate? What won't it tolerate? What will government tolerate? What won't it tolerate? And just to say, well, it's kind of in the hands of the individual when they're ready. At some point, first, quite personally, I have to say it can't be forever. That's downtown Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's a balance, but no, I agree.
An area certainly to work on. I think the tech thing you were pointing out with your iPhone is needs to be improved, because communication and access is really key. So just pop in.
To answer your question, sort of that bridge, so I had a similar question when I was in San Antonio too, and I walked the river walk with the police, and for the encounter, I said, so generally check to find out whether they're dangerous to, you know, the people here. But beyond that, we inform them about the facilities we have for them to do that. And most times they will decline. And the HR response to them is, well, you have the same rights as everybody in our city. And you don't have any more rights, and you don't have any less rights. You can't break the law. We're not requiring you to use our services, but you can't do things that are illegal when we have services available for you. And we will be back this afternoon or later this evening, but we will find you every few hours and offer you services. That's their basic model, because of the same thing. You can't just say no and do whatever you want. You can say no, but you can't break the law. I think we have to work now. True, if you know, the facility made it so that they have facilities readily available in most cases. So when we don't have facilities readily available, we have to deal that, and we should be notching that up to say, okay, we have a problem because, you know, we have a need and we can't offer services, so we have to accept that it's not available to them. But and then we have we'll have data of work from how many times does it happen. Somebody and we can't offer them an alternative to, you know, breaking a law, and we certainly not set up. But I do believe that that steady will interact with you every day, every 2 days, whatever it is, to make sure that we have a plan, that you understand what you have the right to do, you understand what we can do to help you, but you can't just decide that you want to do whatever you want.
I could say one more thing. I think the challenge is, and sort of why I get quiet, that's really an enforcement role. And, you know, from two ends of it, the behavioral sort of making a determination on when someone's able to make decisions. And this is where I start stepping out of my lane a little bit. And but, you know, this commission is... I don't know if this commission is the exact commission for that recommendation. It's a fair question, but that, to me, that feels more of a law enforcement role, and that's also where it's challenging for a group like Outreach and Engagement. They are not an enforcement group. They are, they're the service end of it. So.
Right, but the reason that you have law enforcement around this table, you have city managers, you have the social, you have United Way, you have, like, talking about that river walk. There's nobody there drinking in public at night. There's no one drunk in public who spends overnight on the river walk. That place is cleared out, and everybody goes over to their shelter at night. They know they're not allowed on the river walk.
And if I might, just to provide a little context, I think what I hear the district attorney saying is kind of like law enforcement's goal, right? To establish some sort of goalpost to get to, because we're supposed to be getting our profession further and further away from the non-criminalization of our homeless population or the mentally ill. And we all would support that wholeheartedly. The problem that exists more often than not, I think is what has been touched on here, is when the person is ready, we don't have the service ready to provide them. And it's actually a loss at the street level, meaning it's going to take more time and more context to redevelop that rapport to say, hey, we're finally ready with the resource you wanted 6 weeks ago to get you in there. And until we can shore up the system behind that, law enforcement is going to still be responding. And there are going to be times when law enforcement disappoints the community with our response to a particular situation, for sure. But if the system was more robust, and this is why the data thing is so important, because right now I don't think we know where people are falling out on the frequent, right? Like, there are people that are constantly coming back into our communities after trying out whatever option they exercised at the time. And so there needs to be some sort of way to capture that data. We have to be willing to own the data, whatever it says, and retool our efforts to shore up those areas where these folks fall out. Because the answer is enforcement, I think you would agree. But until then, it's law enforcement at the street side trying to weigh the rights of the homeless individual and the rights of the community member who has called and said, this is not acceptable. And therein lies the dilemma of the law enforcement response. Because nobody else is going to answer the phone in the middle of the night and actually show up when someone alleges something's happening. And so we're a willing partner in the outcome. And I would say I would love to get it to where we've established the goalpost for acceptability. But I don't think we can actually get there until the system is ready to support that goal, meaning you had so many places to jump off and get into some sort of service that you would accept, and it was ready for you, and then you missed it, so now we're going to use enforcement as a mechanism for getting you into one of those offshoots.
All right, I appreciate the discussion. We do have a agenda. If you please, and then let's move on to our next item.
Talk about case management. So you. Your initial engagement comes with the homeless people. And the transition, ideally the transition isn't to a shelter, right? I mean, ideally you could bypass that step, right? A shelter is a last resort. You sort of house them and deal with them in other ways, right? But whatever the process is, it doesn't become an individual doesn't necessarily become stable when they move from one phase to a shelter or to a being housed, as you said, to house somebody, and we've had this happen in data point or whatever, they're back on the street and you go, well, we worked really hard and we found a great place and what went wrong, right? And ultimately if that case management doesn't sort of carry through to track stability, okay, so we've done it. Now, what are the issues you face? How's it working for you? At least until the situation is and the individual is more stable, I think we miss an opportunity. So I, as looking at that, I don't know how you're, and I know you're challenging staff like that, but I think the idea of dropping them when they move to the next phase would be unstable. When you talk about staff, right? I mean, staff is always a challenge about working. I happen to be one of the intents that the city, the one role the cities should all play is outreach. Right? Do they know their individuals and their community better than anyone? That have to carry it all the way, but they should be the first ones who know the contacts of their clients and have the relationship with the individuals. We have so many programs in the city to have relationships with people in a workable environment. And the homeless are just another organization that we should have understand and have a good relationship with. needs, there are handoffs that need to happen to engage the other organizations to have more research in the individual cities and the individuals move around. How do you propose that we sort of dovetail all these pieces together to really have your agency hold a bigger role ultimately without just consuming all the resources?
I actually love both of those questions. Perfect segue, because one of the things I didn't mention is that through our regional care coordination contracts, there is a housing stability component where they are expected to go to the unit and check on the client and ensure that case management is still happening. And then that will be for a duration of time so that they aren't kind of left alone until really they can do it on their own and they're feeling connected, right, to the other services that they need. And if they are if they're mentally ill, we also have peers that will go out. And I will say that I think about some of our clients. I remember one who we went and visited him in his unit, and he didn't take out the trash because where he had stayed, Public Works came in and picked up his trash. And so we said, "No, dude, you gotta take your trash out." And really showing how to do that, or teach them like, "Okay, these are your appointments. Put them up on the refrigerator, or you need to take care of these things in a way that then doesn't become overwhelming to them." So with really small steps and doing that support. So agreed, housing stability is really important, and that's why it was written into these contracts. And then we have other ways, like you mentioned. And then you mentioned, how do we work together with the city? Agreed, we have some amazing outreach teams out there. We're not the only one. And one thing that we do too is we have a monthly convening of outreach workers where we get together. It started very organically as kind of a brown bag lunch of case managers getting together and just leadership and outreach teams of talking about what are our trends, what are our barriers, how do we work together as a system, what kind of trainings do we need, what are our best practices. So we have that as one opportunity, but agreed with your strategy is that when we have these different regional areas, our South team and our North operations, is that we want to go to those and participate. There is one that happens in South County, right, that they do every other Friday. We're going to that now, and we can be active participants to really talk about COVID. And as Doug mentioned, we're entering into HMIS now, so we have, I think, more access to data, and people have access to what we're doing, which they didn't have before when we were in a behavioral health program. So agreed, and that is the route that we're on. We would like to have a coordinated response, because what we find is there's multiple outreach teams meeting this individual. Okay, maybe that's a good thing, because you never know who's going to connect with this person. You know, it takes multiple contacts, different personalities, maybe remind them of their aunt, and that's good, maybe that's bad, right? And so we appreciate that. On the other hand, it starts to staff split. And then we're not maybe making progression because they're like, oh, they told. I keep looking at maps, and we're missing out a lot. But they maybe told their city network or this, they told us that, we're like, wait a minute, I was working on that, or I thought you were doing that, or no, they told me this. And then it actually creates confusion. So we like the idea of having more coordinated dispatch and partnering with our city outreach teams or contracted outreach teams so that we're really being smart and resourceful rather than sending out a bunch of folks and just, you know, overwhelming the client. So agreed. And we're working on that and really trying to figure out how do we best coordinate. And one of those is using data from HMIS to find out who they're already working with. So if they're working with our data point outreach worker, right, then maybe we can call up and say, hey, this person's calling us, or we had contact with them. Do you need an assist? Are they, you know, do you need some help because they are experiencing mental illness? Or for us, it might be that they're a family. I'll say that's not our expertise. We would probably call an assist to have a team come out here and work with the family, right? So agreed.
Okay, I think
sorry,
we appreciate the explanation, and this is warranted further study. Now that we have our pillar system, I think one of the pillars can handle that once we create a committee under that pillar. Mm-hmm. So I thank you for
your
presentation and your knowledge and the good work you're doing.
Thank you.
Now we must move on to our discussion items. There's been a lot of discussion on the agenda. Madam Clerk, would you please read the next item?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. Item 2 under the discussion calendar is an update from the Office of Care Coordination regarding the 2023 survey and the Homeless System Pillars Report.
So, Doug, if you would provide us with an update.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, as we discussed in our June and August meetings, the Commission is interested in doing some form of a survey in replacement of our point-in-time cap for 2023. In August, we reported the challenges of conducting a full 2023 point-in-time cap and agreed on using the opportunity to conduct a survey that surveyed a smaller group of individuals but asked them information that we don't get an opportunity to ask when during the point-in-time cap. And I think specifically looking at trying to ask questions around specifically survey service resistance, how, you know, doing qualitative surveys that ask questions to hopefully targeting our most chronic population to get an understanding of how do we, you know, with our existing system, what works, what doesn't work, how do we need to adjust this system and get good feedback like any sort of customer survey. In the last 2 months, our office has worked with Joe Coletti. He's as many of you know, he's the CEO of Hub for Urban Initiative and a really important consultant to us here at the Office of Care Coordination. Helps us and every continuum of care in Southern California in conducting their point-in-time count. To start to gather a little bit of information and pick his brain on what the framework would look like if we did an alternative count. I'll call it an alternative count. He gave us some basic information. He felt like if we're going to do something smaller, it needs to be at least representative of 20% of our point-in-time count. And as we talked, we also were looking at understanding the landscape and the resources to some degree in a very preliminary way that we'd be looking at potentially doing something in March. That's putting the cart a little bit ahead of the horse here. So our next step, as it, you may remember in our last meeting, we approved, or you all approved, the development of an ad hoc group specifically focused on this conducting this particular survey. So my office will work with the chairman's office in helping identify a potential ad hoc group. Specifically, I think one of the things that we've heard was ensuring that we're working with cities, law enforcement, and our COC. So hopefully within the next couple of weeks, we'll be able to communicate with you all what that looks like. My second update is around our homeless service systems pillar report. So we all know we finalized it in our last meeting in August, and we took action to recommend it for receive and file up to the board. The board received and filed it yesterday and had some discussion about it. Moving forward, there's a couple of things that the Office of Care Coordination can report that we're working on to ensure that you know, we're implementing the best practices and guiding principles that are outlined in this report. So in a very simple example, you know, each group that we work with to present here, we will ask them to not only, like I said, present on their model, but really speak to how it fits into our pillars and how they'll align with our pillars, or maybe not align, and discuss that as a group here. On the county front, our office is working very closely with the CEO's office and with the departments to create a process by which any contracts or services that the county provides that touch any of these four pillars align with the principles and guiding principles and best practices of the you know, of our pillars report. Then lastly, I ask and encourage all of you as we move forward to continue to think about ways we can ensure that, you know, the common language and framework we have worked on and agreed upon continues to guide us also interested in knowing how each of you come from and lead many different, lack of better term, shops, and how you are bringing these principles and agreed framework back to your respective shops and implementing it. And I think that that's incredibly helpful for us to hear. With that, that concludes my update.
Well, thank you for that. I'd ask the clerk, are there any members of the public who would like to comment?
We did not receive any requests from the public to speak on this item.
And invite the commission members, any questions for Doug or any comments you'd like to make, Paul?
I have a couple. I have a suggestion about the survey. When and you and I talked about it, probably me and Doug a little bit. I feel like we did the point in time count at the end of February, and it's 8 months later, and we still haven't got the data kind of report out. And it just in terms of going back and understanding that and the implications of it, because I think we're doing a survey to collect additional data. That data needs to be useful, or it's not worth spending the time to collect it unless we can really use it, right? And I felt like that we had an ad hoc committee that Matt ran actually to plan the survey, how to get that data, how to work with the city, staff it, do ask the questions, get all the things that we needed to do to collect that data. In retrospect, it might have been helpful to have another ad hoc committee that said, okay, we have to make sure as the data, you know, that we know, we understand how we're going to process the data so that it's really useful and work through all of those issues that we might have in collecting the data and making sure that it could be available to organizations without running into problems with divulging names or whatever the challenges were in both getting the data and getting the process. And we worked to make sure that the data as collected could readily be processed and produced a result. We could literally kick that data out, about 1 nanosecond after that button was pushed to that moved in, and started to leverage that data and use it and then add this data to it. So my suggestion is that in addition to working on team to go back and collect some additional data, that we start to think about how that data as it collects is processed so that it's readily useful to all of us, and we can add it to the other data and really build on the data that we're collecting. I think the meeting with Joe Coletti, when we talked about the processes, was helpful, and he said it's always all about the data. I mean, ultimately, the more you collect, the more you can build on that data, and the more you leverage the data, the more value you get out of this effort you're doing. So I'm just, I'd like to suggest that we at least consider putting together a group that talks about how this data can be processed or that it can process.
Actually, be part of the discussion.
Available. And maybe the data, when we look at it, will actually fill in holes like we missed in the other data. But we need to know what those holes are by looking at the data and say, okay, we can only collect a certain amount of data in a given time. But in the intervening years, we can collect a different subset of data that can tie together but fill in some of the blanks that we didn't collect, because you can't make that survey infinitely long. So there's some opportunity by looking at the data itself and how to use it that I think we could take advantage of and should look into that. And the other comment I want to just make on the pillars report is you brought up is to keep it vibrant, right? We, as I said, when I got on the commission, when it was reformed, the previous commission started in 2010-ish, right? Wrote a strategic plan, and it was excellent. It took a lot of work. I mean, I went through that plan, and many of us have. That was a lot of effort to write that plan. But it never became a document that we lived with every day. And then it didn't drive what happened after that and the day in and day out. We put work together to do the pillars. They have to drive direction and activity, or else we as a commission will likely who suffered the same fate as Dana, which would sort of begin to be uninteresting and fall apart because we're not actually moving the stuff forward. So I just want to agree with Doug strongly that we have to bring these back, and we have to compare what we're doing against them, and we have to build on them. You know, the pillars hold up the platform. We better make sure the platform is doing something right. So anyway, so thank you, Doug.
Thank you. Yeah, the pillars are now approved by the board, and so now we have a chance to implement and see that it works. Yes, please go ahead.
Yeah,
Sue.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up on that, I was thinking when you were talking about it, it'd be great when we were in this room to have the pillars up on the walls, right? And in front of us at all times. And then we could also take and create that glossary, if you will, to send out to all of the agencies and all the cities. Let's get it visible, right? And I think that, but just even right now, there's an opportunity to make us.
It's a great idea.
You know, remind us in terms of what we're doing.
All right, any other comments? Otherwise, we'll move on to the action items on our agenda. Ask the clerk to read the first item. Actually, number three, I think it is.
Yes, item number three under the action items is to approve the recommendation of the following applicants to serve as members on the Commission to End Homelessness to the Board of Supervisors for final approval, including hospital representative Christy Cornwall of Providence Mission Hospital, business representative Monique Davis of Habitat for Humanity of OC, municipal fire representative Chief Sean Dimitropoulos from City of Orange Fire Department, and behavioral health representative our vice chairman Dr. Richard Afable of Be Well Orange County.
I'd like to thank the individuals who applied to serve on the commission. There was a robust amount of interest. And now I'd like to have Doug Beck go over the process of the recruitment, how these individuals are chosen, and what the next necessary steps are. I think it has to go up to the board.
Exactly. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in August, our August meeting, the commission approved the launch of our recruitment process for these four seats, which also included utilizing the existing membership ad hoc committee of Mr. Pinneman and Captain Patella. Their responsibility was to recommend to either appoint or reappoint commission members to these seats. We had a public and open application window from September 1st to September 22nd. During that time, we received 8 total applications for those 4 seats. On the 29th of September, our office met with the membership ad hoc to go over each application and decide and determine who to recommend to the commission for consideration. As the clerk read, we have in front of us here 4 names. I'll just quickly repeat them for the group here. Christy Cornwall, who's the Director of Community and Health Development at Providence Mission Hospital. Monique Davis, who is the CEO and President of Habitat for Humanity of Orange County, Chief Dimitropoulos of the City of Orange's Fire Department, and then reappoint Dr. Afable. Next steps here are for us to vote on it, for the commission to vote on it, to be recommended up to the board. Our office will then bring it to the Board of Supervisors for approval, most likely in either the last meeting of November or the first meeting of December, which are both before our December 14th, our next commission meeting. So with any luck, we'll be able to have these members seated in our December meeting. Just one last note, we have communicated with all 8 applicants about the direction we're talking about today.
Well, thank you, Doug. Inquire of the clerk, is there any public commenters?
We have not received any request to speak on this item.
Then I invite the commission if you have any comments. Otherwise, we need a motion to be made to accept these applicants, and they will be moved up to the Board of Supervisors for formal appointment. May I have the... Yes? Okay. Please do.
Yeah, thank you so much, Chair. I want to thank the people who applied and showed interest in volunteering for this commission and supporting this important visible conversation. I just want to speak to a couple of the candidates that, for me, I thought there was some, you know, the voters themselves, of course, assuming the vote goes forward in support. But I was at a recent panel discussion put on by OC Grantmakers, and Christy Cornwall with Providence Mission Hospital was on this panel. It was about racial equity, healthcare, and homelessness, and kind of making the linkages, particularly capacity among nonprofits, such a challenging time for us all, staffing, hiring, you know, business 101 challenges. In that context, she just made a comment, in order to address these challenges, it's not what happens inside the hospital walls that's going to end homelessness, that's going to address these things, but happens outside the hospital walls we have to address. And I just wanted just to speak to, I think, that and noticing that she's on the equity NOC task force and other aspects of resume, just some nice, strong cross connections between Providence Mission and other aspects of the work we do. I just think that's a strong, a good voice for us here on the commission. I also wanted to speak briefly to Monique Davis with Habitat for Humanity of Orange County. She has a very, very strong resume in homeless services outside of Orange County, and I think a lot of that perspective is going to be great value to us because I think we can end homelessness in Orange County. I think it is something that it is on our plates to address first, and secondly, in terms of outside resources and support. And I think that perspective on what works and doesn't is going to be very valuable for these conversations. And I just want to make the broad statement too. We do listen to the comments that come from our public speakers. And one of the comments I heard was critical feedback that the commission, the commissioners, including myself, have potential conflicts of interest being on the commission with how the funding works. I don't think that's a concern that speaks to my decision making, but I want to observe that was made. And I just was I don't see any of those types of overlaps here. I thought that was a positive thing to see. So the mindset that we're having, folks who are here on the commission, who are just speaking their minds, is a positive thing and with expertise. And so I just wanted to share those comments and thoughts. Again, I appreciate the support from staff and the chair and a healthy process for seeking and onboarding new commissioners.
Thank you. Sue, you had your hand up.
I was just going to move, but I'll stop it.
Oh. Thank you. Any further comments? All right. Are there any objection to the motion? All right. Great people are unanimously approved by this board, and I will go to the Board of Supervisors for a formal appointment. So thank you for your comments. I appreciate that. We need to be sure we thank the applicants who have chosen. All right. Now our next item, Madam Clerk.
Yes, item number 4 under the action items is to approve the Commission to End Homelessness minutes from the August 17th, 2022 regular meeting. And Chairman, we have not received any requests to speak from the public on this item.
All right. Well, then we'll move on to Commissioner comments. We've had some discussion along the way, but if there's any addition, comment anyone would like to make.
I'm sorry. I think we need to approve the minutes.
I missed a minute.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes, Mr. Chairman.
I will second it.
Sorry.
Thank you for reminding me. Okay.
Moved and seconded.
Moved and seconded. Are there any criticism, anything wrong with the minutes, any additions anyone would like to make? Seeing none, all right. Any objection to the motion to approve the minutes? All approved? Okay, I'm not bothering with this. I know stuff. So, okay, the minutes have been approved. Now it goes on to commissioner comments. Any additions that not already discussed, or something that wasn't on the agenda that you'd like to talk about?
Mr. Chairman, yes, sir. For just a second, I wanted to announce to the group and then as well as the public that on the 31st of October, our Hope Center of North Orange County is going to open. And for those of you who don't know, we've been working on this for about 2 years in the North Spa area. All 11 cities are part of our effort. And the idea behind it is we're building a place where we can bring the right people with the right resources to provide the services right now. And so on that day, we'll be bringing many of our elected officials. The chairman has been very supportive of our efforts, as well as federal and state partners. And then we're having very encouraging conversations with our partners in the county and elsewhere to bring the services into the north so that we can get more efficiency and more movement. Kind of like what you mentioned, Mr. White, about getting everybody together and doing that. I use this horrible analogy, but I'm going to use it because people will Google this. But there's a show called The Care Bears back in the day, and each one of these bears had a really positive attribute that they would bring to bear on particular issues. And when they were particularly troubling, all of them would look at this particular issue and combine their attributes to solve the problem. And that's really kind of the core of what we're working to do here in the North. So I'm available at any time. If you want to email me, I'd be happy to take on a tour and share with you more about what we're doing. But we're just building on that collaboration that's been going on for quite some time in the North. And we thank the chairman and many others who have been supportive of our effort thus far.
So I might describe a little bit what it is. It's sort of like a dispatch center for social workers to attend to homelessness issues. You might explain a little bit.
Oh, sure.
That.
I didn't want to take up too much of people's
well,
time.
It's not. It's important.
I'm like the last guy, and everybody's probably wanting to get out the door. But the concept is, one, from the law enforcement side, it is not the primary role of this facility to provide any type of law enforcement effort. We're simply a supporting role. And one of the goals is to further law enforcement from response to the calls that we talked about before. And so there is a dispatch component where if you call into our center, and I know these programs exist in the nearby cities like Anaheim, and I know cities that runs those types of things. So we're not doing anything I think you could call revolutionary as much as because of what the North has done over the last 5 or 6 years and the collaboration, we're doing it without really regard for our city borders, and that's probably the more the revolutionary part. We're going to be inclusive of anybody who's in our North 11 cities so that we can get the most efficient space there. So if you call into a police department and you're alleging non-criminal activity of a homeless neighbor or maybe someone who might be having a little mental health episode but is not criminal in nature, you'll be transferred here. A dispatcher will take all the information and send it out to the mobile teams who will then go to that particular call and try to bring those resources. One of the resources that we're fortunate to have in Fullerton is a per clinician provided by the county. And right now, that program is also, you know, challenged with staffing. And so what we have agreed to as law enforcement in the North is to say, if any on any given day, if an HLO, a home liaison officer from any of the involved cities is driving around with the per clinician, we will go to any city in the North to bring the clinician to that particular person in crisis at the time of their crisis. And so we're really working to try to break down any of those barriers or impediments to success at the time that the person is ready to receive the service. It's going to be a little bit of time before we're, you know, to where we want to be. We're setting those goalposts, but I'm pleased with the progress we've made so far. We have some more to go, and be happy to have time to share even more with you.
I think it's an important service because now, by combining resources for the 11 cities, you do 24/7. Is that the goal?
It won't start at 24/7. So we're looking to do a soft launch on 11/1, the day after the opening, and it will be Fullerton and Buena Park to participate. There is some data collection we want to do to see kind of call volumes. The phone line for the dispatch center will be open 24 hours. It will not be answered by a human, but there's technology that exists now where you can dictate things, and it will basically go into queue. So what Christina mentioned that you get from calling them will exist in our facility as well. And it will populate and queue the call for the following morning when all of the crews come in, and then they can triage the list of people who need assistance. And from there, that right resource in the room will be dispatched to that person to try to get the most movement.
But eventually, when you have all 11 cities,
that
there, it's intended to be 24/7.
100%.
Yeah, so it's a great idea, and I hope it works, and maybe we can get South County or something one day. So thank you for all you've been doing. You've been working hard, I should imagine, for a couple of years.
We're great appreciative of all everybody's support.
Any other comments? Well, I'll make one. We have a gun buyback program coming up, and thank you, Chief, for participating in that this coming Saturday. And thank you, Mr. DA, for putting your stamp on it, too. We have 7 cities that are joining in. Placentia's taking the lead. They have the spot. They have a small staff, so the other cities are sending some help to run the gun buyback program. It's got some special rules. We ask the people wanting to dispose of their guns to place in the trunk of their car. It's a drive-through event, and then when they come in, they pop the trunk. An officer will take the weapon out and grade it, whatever it is. If they can't pop the trunk, we're asking them to give the keys to the officer. They don't want anybody touching weapons, and the officer will pop the trunk. We're paying out with Amazon gift cards and also gas cards, so it's gas for your guns if you bring them in. And the $200 for a handgun, a ghost gun, a rifle for that sort, if they're operable, $400 for a assault rifle. It would be like to get any of those. My office is funding the gift cards, and also we're funding any staffing from the various cities that are participating. We don't want cities to be paying for this, and they're all struggling with their own financial issues, so we're able to reimburse whatever their cost is for the offices who participate. It's a come in, no questions asked, no ID necessary. We just want to get as many weapons out as we can. A lot of statistics about weapons that are kind of loose in homes. Maybe somebody inherited a weapon that they don't want, or they just don't know what to do with it. There are people who are well trained and they store their weapons well. That's not really who we're trying to deal with. We want to see that children don't pick up a weapon in their house. We don't want a weapon stolen during a burglary. Who knows where that's going to go? That type of thing. We're also, for those that want one, if they have other weapons, giving them a gun lock free of charge. So we think that's a service. So it's Saturday, and I can get the, I think, Paula, do you have a flyer? Somebody maybe has a flyer if you're interested. Well, we'll get you a flyer if you're interested in doing that. It's 9 to 1 this Saturday. In an industrial area in Placentia, and we'll get you the exact specifics if you'd like that. So if there are no other comments, thank you all for attending, and sorry for me being late, but thank you for doing the great job, and I should have been later so you could run the whole meeting.
You did great, Mr. Chairman.
And okay. Chairman, just real quick, just to note for public comments that we do not have any requests from the public to speak under general public comments for today's meeting.
Okay, good. Thank you.
It's 166 East La Jolla.
Yes.
And it's like an industrial.
It is.
Yeah.
With easy drive through ability. So. Well, when we're done, you don't want to stick around.
Meeting adjourned.
So we are adjourned.